Welcome to the Human Experience Podcast with Carl Sokia.
Aloha! And welcome to a very exciting day. This is the actual season premiere of season two of the Human Experience, or HX podcast, featuring Carl Sokia. And I am so excited. I've gotten a lot of your texts, messages, DMs, a lot of people saying, where's the podcast been? Where has it been? So I'm so excited to be able to return and be able to invite a bunch of people in and kind of talk about their lives and kind of get back to what we were doing. We last left off in the month of December. I'm talking a little bit about You Got This and Chris Anderton and his great efforts with suicide prevention with the youth. And then we took the holidays off, and then a lot changed in my life. I actually joined a tech startup based here in a little city called Farmington, an area called Station Park in Farmington, Utah. And I'm on the founding executive team. I'm the chief human experience officer, and I joined them in the middle of December. And ever since then, I've just been nose to the ground doing a lot of work and haven't taken some time to really get in the studio and run this podcast. And so I'm excited to be back to start running it. And what's even more exciting for me is the fact that I have a man that I absolutely love here in the studio. And it's really funny because I always say you can, you know, just because you've got the same blood, you know, you're related, but I always believe that you choose your family, right? And Patrick Sherman Essex, the man that I have here, people know him as DB or Danger Boy. Pat is as close to my family as you can get. He's my brother. For all intents and purposes, Patrick is my brother. And I'm so glad that he is able to come in here and be able to share his voice and his talents and his abilities with me and with all of you, especially to kick off season two here in the studio, here in my home. So my brother, Patrick, welcome to the show.
Dude, thank you. Thank you very much. I feel the same way.
Yeah.
You're a lot of, I hope your listeners probably don't know what a good guy Carl is. And Carl is a specific kind of good guy. Carl is the kind of good guy that he's one of those friends, at least this is what you've always been to me.
Yeah.
And probably I've probably leaned on you maybe a little too much.
Never. No way.
But Carl is a guy that will drop everything and come help you. If you're a person like me who at times in my life have had, you know, sometimes, you know, I'm a person that, you know, especially a few years ago, a person that was like, I'm having an emergency. and I could think of a few times that Carl Sokia has rushed over to help me out of a jam. So that's the kind of guy you are. And, you know, I really, now that I say that, that's, you know, that's kind of what you do with this podcast, you know,
yeah.
You're helping people, you're trying to help people,
yeah.
You know,
the goal is just to share, I think, you know, kind of extract all that we can out of our own lives and try to share it with other people. Number one, so that people know that they're not alone, right? It's, we're all going through crap. I know a lot of people look at me personally and go, I can think of 20 years ago when they were looking at me and they're going, okay, this kid's lost. Like, you know, even before my mission and so on, it's like, you know, you're partying, you're going out, I'm sleeping on people's couches. I don't know what I'm doing. You know, you're dating and you break up,
sure.
And you almost blow up. And, you know, and then I kind of came home from my mission and still a little bit lost, disoriented. And I felt, I mean, I was lost. I wanted to, you know, I almost committed suicide when I was 19 because I was just lost. I was popular, friendly, but you just get in this weird space. And I think that's been one of the biggest goals is I know how I felt. And I just want people to know, people look at me now today and go, wow, he's got it all buckled up. He's got a great business career and he wins awards.
Oh, everybody's
look at his beautiful
got
wife and look at these children. And it's like, no, I still have dark days. I still have challenges at work. You know what I mean? I'm still trying to figure it out with my wife and kids. Like, I'm just a normal human being, but not everybody sees that. And, you know, and I think social media contributes to it. But I also think we always just try to put our best foot forward, right? We're always trying to show people, hey, I've got it together. But on the back end, we know that we don't. And so that's kind of, you're right. What I'm trying to do with this is say, I hope you can relate to some of the things that you hear from different kind of people. But I also love the fact that we get to see behind the scenes of how people came up in the world, where they're at. And you can, instead of looking at me as how you think I am, you can kind of see all of the things I've gone through and be able to go, oh, that's interesting. I've never had to go through that.
But it's the journey that makes the man.
Sure.
And, you know, and it's your life. Yeah. So if you want to call it lost when you were younger, I hope you remember that I knew you at that time.
Yeah, that's right.
But dude, you know, I think there needs to be a time period, a time set aside in people's lives to be lost a little bit. You know, you can't find yourself if you don't go looking. And, you know, when people are young, You know, hopefully people do what you did when you did it.
Sure.
So that, you know, it sucks to try and find yourself in your 40s and your kids got to suffer for it. Or maybe you get into a marriage that wasn't a great idea. But, you know,
yeah,
I mean, I agree with you. You know, yeah. your perception of your situation is, I mean, that's, you know, it's your life.
Of course.
But I think people, you know, let young people be young.
That's
true. And part of being young is like, I don't know anything.
Yeah.
You know?
But even as we get older, you'll find pockets of that too. I mean, even when I left my job.
I feel the exact same as I did when I was 21 years old right now.
You're serious.
I'm still terrified. Still terrified.
It's funny though, because I left my job and, you know, to start my own business. And my first thing was, what in the world did I just do? Mm-hmm. And then it was also interesting because, you know, as I was trying to build my business and say, okay, I had all this experience in human resources and hospitality and all these things, life skills. How do I now put something together and go share it with the world? And it was a time where I said, who am I? Because I also thought, all I've done all these years is I go and latch onto my company. They pump me full of what, I drink the Kool-Aid. I'm carrying their banner. Mm. I'm still individualizing it and telling my own stories, but I'm kind of pushing their agenda and pushing
You're the corporate guy.
I'm the corporate guy.
Man.
And then you step away from it and it's like, well, if you give me the story you want me to tell, I'm great at doing it. But what do I really want to do? Because I've never had that freedom to be able to go and do it. And
most people don't.
Yeah. And so it was like, what do I want to go talk about? Mm-hmm. What do I think? And so that was a really unique period of time just in the last, you know, 18 months to be able to go and kind of go through that as well. And being
lost. Well, I mean, as some, you know, speaking as someone that knows you closely.
Yeah.
What, you got how many kids now? 17? 17 kids?
And four on the way.
17 kids. And you got a big house. You know, it costs a lot of money to feed 10 people.
Sure.
It was brave doing what you did.
Sure.
Almost recklessly brave.
Well, don't worry. You weren't silent on that.
No.
I remember being at the gym on a Saturday. So Patrick and I go to Excel over here in Cottonwood Heights.
Vasa.
Or Vasa too.
No, let's not give Excel anything free. Nothing free.
We go to a gym that is to remain nameless
We go to a gym you can't afford.
So we we go to two gyms.
Yes, yes. One you can afford.
And the other one you probably belong to right now. And so, but you know, when we go to the gym, I remember I walked in on a Saturday and I was talking, I'd been talking up to this point about, yeah, I'm going to leave. And Pat was kind of like, what? What are you doing? Like, you got a good deal. And
you were making real grown up money.
Yeah.
And you got real grown up obligations with your 20 kids.
And then I walk in and I was like, yeah, man, it's over. And he was like, mm-hmm. For real? And I said, yeah, no, the last day was over. He's like, dang, okay.
You pulled the trigger on that action. Well, but, and after you told me that, then, now I'm supportive.
Yeah.
Because we're full steam ahead in the other direction.
That's right. We're going.
But again, I applaud that.
Sure.
You know, a lot of people, including me, you know, you get a sense of comfort. You get a couple, you get a couple dollars in your pocket.
Yep.
And the motivation to change your life or do anything quickly evaporates.
I bet. I agree with that. But, you know, kind of getting back to Patrick and Patrick's life, as he alluded to, we've been friends for a long, long time. The first time I met Patrick was in the halls of Taylorsville High School. And I just loved Patrick. He was so funny. And, you know, he's had such a great attitude. And Philip, too. His brother they were just two people that were just so funny.
Philip was funnier than me. He always will be.
Philip was a funny cat. And so that's kind of how I always looked at Pat as, this guy is so awesome. He's so positive. People look to him and he's radiant. And then after my mission, we ended up spending a lot of time together kind of in groups. And Pat and I became really, really close. Mm-hmm. And we were together all the time. And Philip as well, going around. I was sleeping in his apartment all the time on his couch.
Yeah.
We were driving his Jeep. I think I drove his Jeep more than he drove his Jeep.
That's because I was hammered.
That's right. Going around. And that's when we really became brothers. You know, we went through a lot together. And that's where I fell in love with Patrick. I love Patrick Essex. And we started to go through these things and we went through some really heavy things and some really fun times. He met Nikki, you know, over at the University of Utah football game and she came into lives. They got married. They had Connor and everything just kind of blossomed from there. And our families have coexisted and it's been really beautiful. But, you know, kind of as I talk about that, I wanted to set the stage kind of for talking with Patrick because Patrick's gone through a lot, man. He is, and some of it's, you know, great. And some of it, I think it's been very, very hard. But going back to the very beginning, I want you to talk a little bit about kind of growing up, you know, growing up with your family,
Oh,
you know, and then also kind of going, maybe growing up all the way through the period where you started to get into radio and kind of where you found out that was going to be your niche.
Oh, well, the very, very beginning is I was born in San Diego, California. My my dad was San Diego County Sheriff's Deputy. And I don't think I could talk about myself without telling you just a little bit about my parents.
Yeah.
My mom was an English and drama teacher. And so theater and like shows, you know, and just a love for that kind of thing. Entertainment,
yeah,
I guess is a good word, was the energy that I got from her. And my dad is a Vietnam veteran. Two tour of duty Vietnam veteran, like Green Beret Ranger, Vietnam veteran, yeah. And he was a cop. And, you know, I was born in California, and then we moved here to Utah. And we were a really, really loving family. We were a family that it felt like there was always kind of an emergency happening.
Sure.
You know, my dad struggled a great deal with a post-traumatic stress.
I can't imagine.
Which when my dad had it, it really wasn't quite a thing yet. You know?
Right.
You know, it wasn't as widely acknowledged as the emotionally traumatic and neurologically damaging phenomenon that we know it to be today. Yeah. You know, you were just like, that guy's crazy.
Yeah, something's going on, but I don't know what it is.
Well, like my dad would quit his job like that. He was, somebody would rub him the wrong way or
easily triggered.
You know, he'd tell people to pound sand pretty easy. Sure. And there were situations where he was let go too. You know, so I remember from a very early age just kind of a feeling of instability.
Sure.
That is...
That's got to be so tough.
Well, my dad is a great man.
And, he is a great man.
You know, and I love my dad and I respect my dad. And I don't want this to come across as sounding like... You know, my dad was also my scoutmaster.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
And I had great memories camping and doing all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, just a warm, tender relationship with my father. But,
yeah.
You know, any parent knows, you know, you want to be this amazing, great, award-winning parent that sits down and has, you know, heartwarming talks. But, you know, parenting's hard.
And I think we're learning that firsthand right now, you and I.
Totally, totally. You know, but I remember very clearly... Always throughout my life, you know, a sense of emergency kind of.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there were seriously times where my family, we just didn't have things.
Sure.
You know, and, my mom had health struggles too. My mom was a type 1 diabetic and eventually she died from complications of that when I was 21 years old. But, you know, in school for me, I didn't do well in school. I didn't. Yeah. I had a hard time. You know, I just...
You feel from early on all the way through high school?
Always had a hard time in school. High school was when I was thriving as a student. So, for example, like, I was a little boy that I was diagnosed with hyperactivity. This kid's hyperactive.
Yeah.
And I went to Truman Elementary School.
Yeah.
And I remember they would... So, my parents gave me Ritalin. And actually, this is pretty interesting.
Yeah.
So, my dad set a piece of paper down and he said, Pat, write your name. And so, I wrote my name and it's this erratic scribblings of a crazy person. And then my dad gave me the Ritalin, which is the father of drugs like Adderall that they have now.
Yeah.
And gave me that. And then 30 minutes later told me to write my name.
Uh-huh.
And it was like almost perfect.
No way.
Perfect Patrick Essex.
No kidding.
And, you know, dude, I struggled. I struggled in school. I struggled academically because I remember like just thinking all the time. I remember thinking, this is hard and I don't understand.
Sure.
So I would kind of just check out and I took these. So this is a thing. So this is for all the kids now that like carry around their Adderall in their bag.
Yeah.
When I was a little guy at Truman Elementary School, before they kicked me out of elementary school, who gets kicked out of elementary school? But they used to come on to the intercom. And like, and so the whole school, or at least just in my classroom, it would be like, Patrick Essex, come to the office and take your pills. You have to come take your pills because you're crazy. And so I struggled in school And, you know, I struggled academically, and I'm a person that, I feel like I've always struggled socially too.
Yeah.
Because I don't feel like a person that's down. I don't feel like one of the cool kids.
Yeah.
And I found out later in life that a lot of people that struggle with addiction feel that way.
Sure.
School was really hard for me. Elementary school, I got kicked out of elementary school because I would, you know, fight with kids. And, you know, there's one kid, I remember this to this day. I'm 42 years old and I remember this. So we went through a phase in school where everyone was like kicking each other in the nuts.
or you'd like... On purpose?
Yeah, yeah. Or you'd like punch each other in the nuts. And this was at Truman Elementary. And I remember this clearly. So you would go up and you'd put your hands on people's shoulders. You'd be like, hey, I got to tell you something. And then you'd knee him right in the genitals. And I remember there was one kid shortly before I got kicked out of school that I did it to him. And just the look of pain on his face was so awful. I still remember that kid's face. Like if I saw him, I could pick him out of a crowd. But so I went from Truman Elementary to a place called Pioneer Elementary, and I was in what then was called a BD unit, which was a behavioral class for special ed kids, which is what I was.
Like behavioral disability, maybe? Or behavioral disorder?
Just kids. I think it was just kids who would act out or kids who would... You know, there was a room in the classroom called a timeout booth. But when kids would start losing their shit, the teachers would grab them and twist the arm up behind their back and then throw them into the room for a while till they chilled out.
Yeah.
And I remember sitting there, we'd be like doing our whatever classwork and there'd be some kid.
Tommy's in the corner.
There'd be some kid kicking the door, screaming the F word. Like we weren't.
It was like a closed off room.
No, it was like
within the room.
So it was like a shed in the room.
Wow. Oh, I was picturing like they like taped it off.
No. It's
full blown
like,
room.
No, it's like well, you really could even call it a cage.
Oh my gosh.
So you and
like
there's
a padded room within the room.
No pads. So
and, they weren't that kind.
And no doorknob on the inside.
Wow.
And so, well, that was for kids like me, who had, you know, like crazy little dummies who would go around kicking people in the nuts. And,
that's right.
And so I went from Pioneer to like fourth grade to sixth grade.
Yeah.
And I had a great teacher, Miss Brown, who was a cancer survivor.
In that class?
In one of the classes. Okay. So you would move around year to year.
Okay.
But it was a great school. Miss Drake, Miss Brown, I still remember to this day, both of those women helped me get through that time of my life.
Oh, I love it.
And so because of where I lived in Taylorsville, when I was done with that. So you got to, if I could expound on that.
Brother, absolutely.
Okay, because I want people to understand how weird this situation was. Yeah. And like how this is kind of the very beginning of public school systems addressing like, I don't know when to use the word mental illness, but, that's not the word we're using, but like kids that aren't like the other kids.
Sure.
Like we're like, this guy takes pills.
Behavioral differences.
Yeah. Like, so, you know, and Ritalin, and I took lithium, imipramine. I'm sure, I don't think they ever gave me Prozac, but I took all the big psychedelic pills, not psychedelic. I took those later. No, but just like, you know, mind pills, drugs when I was a little guy. So I was supposed to go to Valley Junior High. And this was going to be because this little class was like little like kid jail.
Okay.
Like they had us on lockdown. Like we couldn't wear band T-shirts.
And this is fourth through sixth grade you're still talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. And like we couldn't wear band T-shirts because they were like, they make you riled up.
Wow.
If you wear a Metallica shirt, you'll lose your shit. So
is that a Primus shirt?
Yeah.
Are you okay?
Yeah, I wish. But those were like privileges we had to earn.
Oh, I see.
And then eventually you could go mainstream. Like they would let you go sit in on a class with normal kids.
Wow. Oh, and really? Like you'd graduate out into the field.
Well, they'd almost like parole you.
Okay.
Like you'd get to go to like a history class. I remember I got to go sit into a class with the regular kids.
Yeah.
And I was sitting in there and I was looking at regular girls. And so I say that to illustrate like what a traumatic shift it was for me to go into junior high school.
Yeah.
So I'm supposed to go to Valley Junior High.
Yep.
And I'm sitting there with my mom And I don't know the person's name, and I probably, it doesn't matter, it was so long ago. But this guy's sitting there, and I think he's the dude, the man at Valley Junior High.
Kim?
And and he just said, no, you can't come. We've got too many problem kids already. Wouldn't let me come. So my mom was a drama and English teacher at Thomas Jefferson Junior High.
Yep.
And so I went there. I went to school with my mom at Thomas Jefferson Junior High.
Oh.
And bro, that was so crazy going from like kid prison to
West Side.
And I don't want to say it was rough because I mean, rough is a relative term, you know, like, you know, a junior high in
Compton is going to be different.
Yeah.
Than
in Oakland. Yeah. It's going to be. But it was scary to me.
The West Side.
It was scary to me.
That's right.
And you got to remember, like, I was a dude, like, I couldn't use the bathroom without getting permission. And like, I was coming from classes where if you got out of your seat and started walking around, they'd assume you were going to do something crazy.
Absolutely.
And they'd grab you and throw you to the ground and like put you in timeout.
Yeah.
So it was scary for me. Yeah. It was scary. And I don't know if I want to expound on some experience, but I had a rough time in junior high.
Sure.
So so this is back, like, I was a little, I had no perception of fashion or, like, okay, so there was...
in junior high, man.
Well, and it was, dude, this is when, like, back in the day, this is the early 90s.
Yep.
This is when kids were stealing polo glass frames out of the mall and just wearing the glasses and, like, and people were wearing jabots and...
Copper Rivet was the spot.
Yeah, yeah. You're right. Everybody was so fly, and I think I already made it clear that my family didn't... We didn't have that stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't have it. So I come from special ed, like, special guy school.
Yeah.
And, oh gosh, okay. I'll share an experience.
Sure.
And this is really putting myself out there.
Sure.
Okay, because this is something that, like, traumatized my life for decades.
Really?
Yeah. So, and I still remember what I was wearing.
Really?
I was wearing... because I was such a nerd and so scared, so scared. I had a white Snoopy t-shirt on.
Okay.
And I had a pair of just like swim trunks on.
Okay.
That were purple and they had a black stripe across the middle of them. I remember this.
That's good.
And
memory.
So I'm sitting in a class. Well, you'll understand why in a minute.
Yeah.
So I'm sitting in this class and you know me, dude. So I'm a guy that like, I can have to go to the bathroom.
Yeah. Like that.
Like that. And I always have my entire life.
Yep.
I was a bedwetter till I was 45.
Sure. Sure.
I'm 42.
That's
now.
Right. We're going to wean him off here in the next couple of years.
And I had a doctor say that some of the medication I was taking could have made this harder. But but also always been a guy that has to pee like that.
Sure.
And sometimes I'm just like, I got to go right now. So I was sitting in this class. In a new school where my mom was a teacher wearing a Snoopy shirt. And I was like trying to get the teacher's attention. I was like, I have to go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
I have to go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
And I remember the teacher would like, she like just told me, she said to, and there's nothing wrong with this teacher. This teacher had no idea what a crazy little weirdo she was dealing with.
Sure.
But like, so I was just coming from a school where if you stood up and walked out, they would grab you and throw you down on the ground and like you would get hurt. And so I had to go to the bathroom and I'm trying to get this teacher's attention.
Yeah.
And she's like, no, she's like, put your hand down. I'm in the middle of this.
Yeah.
And so finally I'm like, screw this. I'm leaving.
Yeah.
And I stand up to walk out of the classroom.
Yeah.
And right as I get to the front, the teacher turns to me just like, whoosh. She goes, where are you going? And I freeze and stand there. And I peed my pants in front of an entire class of people.
Holy cow.
In the seventh grade. And it scarred me.
But you're also in front of all these people you don't even know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's not like these are some of you, you know, kids you came up with and they're more forgiving. And this is strange.
These are strangers. Strangers.
Well, you're already trying to overcome the fact that you're at this school.
And I just peed my pants in a Snoopy t-shirt.
Can you imagine?
Oh, I don't have to.
I know, I'm saying. Talking to the listeners, like, can you imagine how that would be traumatizing?
Yeah, yeah. And you know, and I should have just stood up and walked out.
Yeah.
But it never even occurred to me. Like, just the whole...
But you know, at the same time, you came from a very structured household. Kind if your of. Father says that, I mean, stop, you stop.
Oh, dude.
You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Your parent, you're a very respectful individual, Pat. And you look at that and you're like, listen, somebody tells you to do something, you're going to be very compliant. You've always been like that. You're like that today. You're a very, I don't want to say the word obedient, but you're very mindful. You know, if somebody says something, you're thoughtful, you're going to be doing that. And that's probably what the situation you were in.
Well,
you know, it's not like you're a rebel.
No,
you know what I mean, dude?
I don't even know. Like, what?
That had to be tough.
You know what? What us being rebels when we were kids, like, I don't know. Is it, what we did when we were kids isn't even rebellious
it's not,
now.
Exactly. You know? And it doesn't affect anybody else a lot of the time. It just affects us, right?
We just wanted to party.
It's an inner rebellion. That's right. Inner rebellion. So did that follow you around through the 3 years you were there?
Oh, yeah. There were kids that, there were people that made fun of me. But, you know, in hindsight, even sharing that story, and, you know, I don't think I've never publicly shared that anywhere.
Sure.
Not even on my own podcast.
Yeah. Well, thanks for being vulnerable.
I don't know. I'm very hypersensitive to people that feel like people in embarrassing situations.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I have empathy for people like that, you know, and I have like, I can appreciate what people are going through. And, you know,
Do you ever find yourself when you're watching people in those situations that you feel like you want to go and help them and get them out of it?
There are movies that I just have to turn off.
Really?
Because things are so awkward and so
weird. We've experienced that together, you and I have.
Yeah. So, you know, and in hindsight, the kids of Thomas Jefferson Junior High, they could have been meaner.
Sure.
They totally could have been meaner.
Sure.
But, I mean, and that was just one, probably the worst experience, but that was just one of things that, you know, happened in junior high. And, you know, and by the time, and, you know, and I think junior high, I think all of life's journeys are like that kind of like at the beginning, you feel unsure and scared, but by the time you're a senior, you're like, ah, bro,
I got this
figured out.
Yeah.
Because when I still, I also have very fond memories of people from that school and teachers and, you know, the theater productions that I was in.
Yeah.
And if I'd known at the time that I was going to be only 21 years old when my mom died, I would have. Now I thank God for that time. I'm so grateful for that time. I'm
driving
so,
to and from school with your mom.
I'm so grateful that I had that time and that I wasn't allowed to go to Valley Junior High. And speaking of driving to and from school with my mom, that's, you know, that is where I fell in love with the radio and wanting to be on the radio. There used to be a morning show on here in Salt Lake City called Kano and Simmons. They were on Cat Country. One morning we were listening and these guys were kind of like shock jocks.
Yeah.
And one morning we were listening and this woman called up and was just reading them the riot act and like, rah, 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 rah. And it was, you know, why I was in junior high. Cause I was in our van, which was unregistered cause we couldn't afford to register our cars.
Sure.
So the kids in the car were always, our parents would tell us to watch out for cops or my mom. Would.
You're watching out. Be on the lookout.
And Kano and Simmons, this woman calls in and she's like, you guys are mean. And she's just letting them have it.
Yeah.
And this goes on for more than a minute.
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, you're right. You're right. You know, we're going to do better. And they just, and by the end of the phone call, the woman who sounds a little older is like, well, okay, boys.
Really?
She was like, get it together. You sound like a couple of good guys, but get it together. And then she hangs up the phone and they both go, bitch. and I just started laughing so hard. And then my mom turned the channel and she was like, we don't need to listen to those guys. And that, I think if I'm really, because we always listen to like KCBX, Power 99.
Man, I went down to their studios,
you know,
man.
And we, you know, I remember great songs like Tiffany, I Think We're Alone Now. And
they were in the old Crane building and I'd go by and visit and try to get stickers.
I never got to go down.
Yeah.
Or the Wild West, the Escape Club. That song.
Wild West.
Gimme, gimme, safe sex.
And it's
give
funny
me
that
love.
You say that because that's the memories I have about music. music in those times, the you know, the late 80s, early 90s, was driving around in my mom's Nissan Sentra and just listening to the music she listened to. And
her, we always listened to
She had
to
a
radio.
Honda Civic, and we would just crank up the music with my mom and just listen.
You know, speaking of being parents, you know, the small ways that we don't even realize that we're shaping our kids' lives.
Totally.
I remember one time my mom loved that song, Tiffany, I Think We're Alone.
I think we're alone now.
We were coming from the Valley Fair Mall back to our house in Taylorsville.
You were hanging at the keyhole.
And I wanted a switchblade comb.
I wanted the fake cigarettes. Those were so cool.
I was always fascinated with smoking. I don't know why. But we got home and the song wasn't over. And my mom didn't turn the car off. She's like, no, we're going to sit and listen to the rest of this song.
No way.
And I loved that memory. And Simmons, dude, think about this. This guy Simmons got in trouble. And I won't say what he did here.
Sure.
Because I'm a gentleman.
Sure.
But this guy gets in trouble on videotape back in the day when no one's on videotape. He like exposed himself to someone at the mall. And this is back in the day when there was no like... Now,
camcorders were like 40 pounds.
Now everybody has a phone, you know? And you know, everyone should always act like they're being filmed. But this guy got caught on camera doing something, ruined his radio career.
Oh, man.
So by the time I got done at Thomas Jefferson Junior High, you know, I was like, dude, I want to go to a school that will be around where I live. And I want to...
Because naturally, you probably would have gone to what, Hunter, right? Hunter or Kearns.
High school?
Yeah.
No, my family lived in Taylorsville.
No, but I'm saying that school fed to...
Oh, I should have gone to Kearns High.
I would have gone to Kearns, right?
You know what, dude? Yeah. And I still... There are people that I see on social media, and I run into people who's like, dude, you went to Kearns with me. And I'm like, yeah, I totally did.
Because that's a feeder school kind of for Hunter and Kearns.
Uh-huh. I would have... Yeah. I probably... There was a time where I had a debate about going to, you know, Kearns High.
K-Town, baby.
In my opinion, the coolest high school letter jacket in all of the...
Amen. That green... That golden green, boy.
It's beautiful. But
Shout out to Ken Mulaney.
Yeah.
Rocking that bad boy around.
So I wanted to go to Taylorsville High School so I could be around kids that were, you know,
in our neighborhood.
Yeah. And for some reason, I knew nothing about the game of football except for I watched it kind of on television.
Yeah.
And for some reason, I thought, I'm going to play high school football. That's how I'll meet some people and make friends. And, you know, and I wasn't wrong.
Yeah.
So I show up to the first day of high school football practice.
Yeah.
Just wearing street clothes.
Yeah.
And not just street clothes, but like the late 90s, like jort overalls. And I show up and all these kids are dressed. They're ready to work out. Like we're doing it right now. And I was like, I thought we were just signing up.
But you were like me in football, because my dad enjoyed watching American football, but he wanted me to play soccer. I mean, I grew up all playing soccer and basketball and even, you know, go learn about rugby and so on. But he never played baseball. And I always got teased through junior high. And there's a lot of people at Taylorsville in junior high that were at Benyon going, oh yeah, you play sissy sports and you sing and you dance and so on. I always went, Dad, I want to play baseball. I was like, I don't know how to play baseball. You're not playing baseball. Football, American football is the same thing. He's like, we don't play American football. No, you don't want to get hurt. So high school was my first exposure when they sent me a letter in the mail and said, show up. Sophomores are going to start playing football. And I was like, I was the same way. I didn't show up in overalls, but I showed up just going,
ready,
I don't know how to play
down
this game.
Some sweet dance moves.
Do a windmill, guys.
Yeah.
Watch this robot. So, I mean, I felt very similar, just kind of going in, going, huh, this is where I'm going to make friends.
Well, you know, I just, dude, I don't know, man. I don't know why I made that decision to try and play high school, because I was awful and I knew nothing really about the game.
Yeah.
The only thing, here's the thing that high school football taught me is that there's nothing that anybody can do that's going to make me quit doing something. Like if I was going to quit, because I mean, dude, I was bad at it. And some of the kids, so obviously everyone knows this, but here's something I didn't know at the time.
Okay.
By the time you're playing high school football, these kids have been playing little league together the whole time.
Yeah.
And here I am again, the stranger, the weirdo. And I just, you know, dude, there was a little bit of teasing. But you know how sports are, you know, and you know how sports teams are.
Yep.
And no coach wants a guy that doesn't know shit about this thing. And You know, but I wasn't going to leave. Yeah. I don't know why.
But well, you know what?
Because my life probably could have been a little bit easier.
Sure.
But I wasn't going to leave.
But didn't you build relationships and have some lessons? Because I walk away in the same experience thinking, there's some real lessons that I learned about myself just absolutely through going through the process.
Well, I love Coach Tuff.
Yeah.
Rest his soul. He was a good man. He was a good man because he really... You know, he could have told me, you know, all those coaches, they could have told me to leave and that I had no business being there.
That's right.
That this is stupid. You're wasting everybody's time.
Yeah.
So high school football taught me how to try at something.
Yeah.
How to have something that I'm terrible at, that isn't glamorous. It's not sexy to do. And a lot of times it wasn't even fun.
Sure.
But I wanted to stick it out. And I did. I played all 3 years. Kind of played. I practiced. I played JV games when I was a senior.
Woo.
What up?
Now what up?
And I still got my ass kicked by Sammy Vidal.
So funny.
Shout out to the Vidal brothers. You know, I wasn't going to stop. I wasn't going to quit. And I did. I got a letter jacket because apparently they'll give them to anyone. And
wasn't as cool as the Kearns letter jacket, but it was cool.
No, I still got it. And, you know, dude.
But you also got to play with your little brother.
You know, we were kind of at the because why he was starting is when the new coach, that Coach Clinton came
in. Coach Clinton came because that was my year.
And I got to be around just a little bit with him together. But I was on the way out, man.
Yeah.
I was ready.
He was playing with me. And I'll tell you what, there is nobody that is more pleasant to be around in 100 degree weather and 3-a-days than Philip Essex.
Oh, dude.
We can be dying, and this guy just looks over and cracks a dry joke or says something funny. He is just such a pleasure to be around, especially during those just brutal times. And he and I mean, we hammered the sideline together, me and Philip.
my younger brother, Philip, is, I still say he's the funniest person. Obviously, I'm a little biased, but just a little bit. My brother, Philip, will look at you and say the most disturbing, hilarious, unsettling thing, and he does it in just the driest man.
Straight face.
Yeah. Like, he'll look at you and be like, I'm pretty sure we're all going to die. You know.
And then he does he does that little the little laugh after this, like an uncomfortable laugh.
I had a great high school experience. I really did. I don't ever, when we have conversations like this, I don't ever want to have like a poor me.
No, of course not.
Because I'm not. I'm a very, very lucky, very fortunate guy. I love my time at Taylorsville High School. Yeah. I love
And we're proud alum. Yeah.
But again, this is a situation, I'm not a great student. Yeah. Not a great student.
Well, we found challenge in it. But like you said, we weren't throwing like these unnecessary curveballs, right? It was just, we found our challenge through those years, but we also loved it and we're proud alumni. I agree.
So
you get past the Taylorsville years.
Well, I start working at Hot 94.9 while I'm in high school.
Yeah. It's senior year?
Uh-huh.
Got it.
So
and then we're in the trailer in the middle of the field, right?
So scope this out.
Yeah.
So we get an assignment from Miss Snow, my senior year, who was my English teacher, that you got to write a paper, what you want to do after high school.
Sure.
And I just thought, because I love to sit in my car and listen to the morning show. I listen to Kano and McCormick, and I used to listen to Mick and Allen and everybody.
Mick and Allen,
and I remember Uncle Nasty from K-Bear. And so I wrote a paper that I said after, and I...
But never Fisher and Todd.
Oh, I love Fisher and Todd. I love Fisher, Todd, and Aaron. I love all those guys. Yeah. No, so I wrote a paper that said I want to do radio.
Okay.
I'm going to be on the radio.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that we had to stand up in front of our class and read it.
Okay.
And so I read it to the class, and after class, a woman in one of the other children, I guess we were still children in the class. She goes, my boyfriend's older brother works at Hot 94.9.
Oh, really?
And they need interns. Yeah. And I was like, shit, word. I'll be an intern.
And, word?
So I started working at Hot 94.9 while I was a senior in high school. As soon as I was done with football, you know, I had nothing else to do. And so I was a senior in high school, and I was just towards the end of my senior year, just getting into it. And I started working at Hot 94.9, and that's where I started at Hot 94.9, which is KZHT.
Yep.
And I worked there for 20 years.
That's incredible, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And it's, I mean, there's the back of the days. I think of Stevie Wonder and some of those, the Polynesian Stevie Wonder and some of those guys.
I ran into him not long ago.
Did you really?
Yeah. All those guys. Well, dude, it was so much fun.
Yeah.
So the laws were different. Yeah. Radio was different. Yeah. There was, so Hot 94.9 and Q99,
yeah,
they were owned by one family, the Bush family.
Oh, I didn't know
and
that.
And Starley Bush just recently passed away a couple years ago, maybe a year ago.
I didn't know Q99.5 was the same.
And I wanted, because I listened to like grunge music, man. Yeah,
X96 kind of stuff.
Well, X96 only exists because Q99 went away.
That's true.
Q99 used to
be the original.
The OG in this town.
That's right.
So I wanted to work at Q99 and I started hanging out. But Hot 94.9 was the first one that was actually willing to give me any money.
Got it.
And go beyond the morning house party with Chet, Cameo, Shu, and Danger man. Boy. There was four of us.
Yeah.
And so that's, dude, that's how I
and
got
the
into
rest
radio.
Was history.
Well, yeah.
I mean, really, that guy was in radio. That's what I'm saying, is that set the course for everything else to happen.
Technically, I still work in the same place.
Sure, of course.
And so coming up, in July,
yeah,
24 years, oh, wow, with iHeartMedia.
Right.
So obviously,
and iHeart's the big dog. Now,
so obviously, I worked on Hot 94.9, which turned into 97.1.
Yep.
And I worked with a bunch of ladies, but I worked with Frankie for 19 years.
When did Frank come into the picture?
He had just
because he had the four people on the show, and then it kind of changed.
It wasn't that long later on.
Got it.
He came in and...
And it was just the two of you at the time, wasn't it?
No, it was never just the two of you. There was a bunch of ladies that went that we burned through.
Yeah.
19 years.
And then pivoted over to Rock, which Rock 106.7, which is... Tell us a little bit about Rock now, because this is exciting. When you pivoted over to Rock and made that change, I was a little bit thrilled too, because I felt like... So DB is known to the world, and his personality is fun, and being at remotes and concerts, everybody attracts to Pat. But I said, but now Pat's with his music. This is with stuff. I mean, I was driving around. I remember when Pat introduced me to the Killers. I'll never forget that day when you popped the Killers album in. And I was like, this is the greatest album in the history of man.
That was a really good album.
We jammed to that album for A, but you were just, you. All this music was just not ZHT music.
No.
You had your own kind of love of music, which is more similar toward where you're at now with Rock.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, this is going to be his element. And even the new crowd that's going to jump in is going to be more aligned with your personal, kind of your personal, like I said, your likes, your music style and all that.
My personal music taste.
Yeah. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
You know, dude, it's, so when I made the transition from, ZHT to Rock 106.7, something really fun was happening with music.
Yeah.
Because classic rock, you know, well, that's the kind of the genre, I guess you would call the radio station, but there was a shift that was happening in kind of that genre of radio and music.
Yeah.
And a lot of the music like Pearl Jam and Metallica and, you know, Nirvana and the Foo Fighters and like Soundgarden and all of these bands are now that I loved, you know, the bands that I was listening to that made me want to go work at Q99.
Yeah.
All those bands are now becoming a little bit more mature. There's a little bit of gray in their sideburns now. And, you know, and so...
Well, Post Malone's doing a whole set up here in Cottonwood Heights, you know, with Travis Barker of Nirvana, right? I mean, what does that tell you?
Well, some of this music... You know, dude, you can't... I love hip-hop music.
Sure.
And I love rock music. I was listening to... You know, I of course... Listen to the iHeartRadio app almost 24/7.
Absolutely. Shout out to the iHeartRadio app.
I mean, we've got it on right now just sitting here because it's so great.
Yeah.
But I sometimes listen to other things too. And I was listening to, like, Lil Wayne has his own radio channel now. I was just listening to that today. But some of this rock music, man, like, I mean, think about, dude, rock and roll is just so powerful.
It is.
And you know, think about, I think the real power of and manifestation of rock and roll is in movies.
Oh, I agree with
like,
you 100%.
Think about
they control your emotions.
Well, but think about like Thor and like think about just the Marvel movies and all these really old, but like Led Zeppelin is what Thor kicks everybody's ass to.
That's right.
I mean, some of this music is just, it's so important. And, you know, not to say that hip hop isn't important, obviously, but I mean, some of this music is just, it timestamps memories, and it's just so powerful, yep. especially when used in film. So I'm stoked to be working with Rock 106.7, and I'm stoked to move into a professionally a part of my life where maybe it's a little bit more about the direction of things that I want to talk about.
And that's exactly what I'm saying.
Things that I want to do.
And, right.
You know, I got so much love for iHeartMedia, bro.
Yeah.
And I got so much love for my man, Stu Stanek. Stu Stanek and Jeff Cochran and Jeff yep. McCartney over there.
Big Mac is the man.
Everybody that helped me through a very difficult thing, which moving from ZHT to Rock 106.7 yeah. was really hard. And, you know, it was a 20-year relationship.
Yeah.
And then, you know, so that was a little bit weird.
And so I guess, so here we go. So this is where it becomes interesting.
Okay.
So you are almost comfortable in your kind of day-to-day with ZHT.
Mm-hmm.
You're in a rhythm. You're killing it. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, if you know Pat partied with the best of them. We'd go out and he and I were thick as thieves. We'd go out and we'd have fun over the weekends. But I'll tell you what I've always just loved about Patrick Essex is we'll go party hard or have fun or go to football games or stay up late or do whatever we do and make our Beto's runs and, you know, and mm-hmm. go get our tacos and burritos. But when it came to 3 a.m., 4 a.m. Monday morning, all business. Every morning was all business. And you locked in and were able to go for 20 years just to be able to live this lifestyle where we're still having fun and we're young and we're single.
Mm-hmm.
But you locked it down when it needed to be locked down and be able to go. And that was always me. I was like, I'm going to sleep until noon and I don't know if I've got a job. But you were always so disciplined and so responsible in those areas, which I loved. But then you went through all of that and then went to a period where it shifted. And, you know, you got married. Mm-hmm. That was a big change.
Mm-hmm.
You have a son. Then mm-hmm. that whole thing changes. And then now you pivot from one station to another and also take on some personal things in your life that shift as well at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think back to this Jefferson Junior High pivot where mm-hmm. you're going from elementary to middle school. And it's kind of like this almost the vulnerability of, okay, now I'm in this awkward spot in a new place. And I've got to, even though you're within the same banner, well, you still have to pivot to a new.
It's funny that you, I'm flattered that we're close enough friends that you would draw that connection because there have been many times. So this isn't the whole story.
Sure.
And part of the reason that I made the switch from ZHT to Rock 106.7 is I think what you're talking about and alluding to is that my drinking had gotten out of control.
Sure.
And I was an alcoholic yeah. and I needed to stop drinking and then B, I needed to reevaluate my life and figure out, you know, well, in that time, it was really quite literally, I had to decide, do I want to stay alive or don't I? And I did want to stay alive. But making the transition to Rock and navigating some of the weirdness of that,
yeah,
I absolutely thought to myself a couple times, man, if I can go back and deal with the kids at junior high after, you know, wetting my pants, I can do this. Or, you
know,
did
you think that?
Absolutely.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Totally conscious. You just told this story.
I was like, man, if I can walk back into a junior high, which is the most vicious, dangerous, hurtful places that God ever devised, you know, if I can walk back into, I can do this and I can deal with this, you know, and absolutely. So that was part of it. And, you know, I want to just own my part of it.
Sure.
That, you know, that my drinking had gotten out of control. And, you know, just because someone shows up to work every day doesn't mean they should be there. You know, I needed to get some help. Yeah. And I did. I got some help. I haven't had a drink in 4 years and some change right now.
I am so proud of this. So, and a lot of this.
And I used to drink.
Well, the thing is to remember with Patrick and I are like brothers. So, I mean, I spent weekends every day.
Sure.
Like I said, we were together a lot. And as he was going through a lot of this personally, I was there with him
mm-hmm.
trying to help and be whatever support I could. Mm-hmm. And as he was going through this with his wife and his son, and it wasn't a scary moment to me because I have so much faith in the man. And you were going through all this, and I just loved you so much, and I love you so much this day. I was thinking, I almost felt a little bit, you know, like out of control. Like I just wish I could do it for you. You know, you were just kind of, you know, I was with you. And especially when we were going through.
I wish someone else could have done it for me too.
But I mean, even as you were going through this whole, like this detox and the drinking and going through the figuring out sobriety, now I'm going to change stations and what's this crap going on at work and all that. You just want to jump in, and I want to be a Porter Rockwell and just start beating people up.
Part of what I learned through this is that, you know, I don't have a huge, like giant network of people in my personal life.
Yeah.
But I have as much of a support system as anybody.
I would agree with that.
As anybody. And one of the things that I, you know, that being an alcoholic and struggling the way that I did to even to be able to say that out loud.
Yeah.
Because there was a long time where I was like, everybody else drinks, you know. There are certain things that no one can help you with.
Yeah.
And you got to do it. And
a lot of that came from, I mean, you lost your mom.
Yeah. And, you know, well, my mom died when I was 21 years old.
Right.
And you know, that hurt a lot. That hurt a great deal. And you know, I mean, 21 years old is young, bro.
Yeah.
You know, when
and she was young,
when you're 21, yeah, you don't feel young, but you're still a baby.
Yep.
Yeah. And I did always love to party.
Yeah,
I did. But what really sent my drinking to the next level was when my brother took his own life.
Within 10 years later.
Same year my son was born.
Yeah.
And you know, and because I haven't been back to therapy because, like I told you a little bit about my earlier life, I have seen so many doctors that I'm not chomping at the bit to go in and see someone. But through the resource, because I belong to a certain anonymous drinking club.
Sure.
And through some of the mentors and people that I've met through that, you know, when you people drink it, you know, people, when you have problems that you haven't dealt with, you know, you like I didn't deal with some of the situation. I don't even know if I want to say that, man, because I always drank hard and I always liked to party.
Yeah.
I like to feel good.
Yeah.
But there have been things in my life where there are bad things, and in an effort to avoid feeling the bad things, you do too much of what you perceive to be a good thing, but it's not a good thing because drinking too much is bad for you.
Yeah. And well, even, but Philip, especially, like you said, it was such a even just enhanced and threw gas on the fire, because I think that kind of came out of left field. We knew Philip was unhappy and there was things that he was upset about and hard and the military and all that. But I mean, it was just like, even the way that, you know, kind of all went down, it was very just surprising. It shocked me to my core.
I had no idea that my brother was going to kill himself.
Yeah, nobody. And it was just, you know, out of the blue.
I had no idea.
Right.
And I know he was dealing with a lot. You know, I mean, I just wasn't there for him, and that's my bad. I thought I was. Yeah. See, here's a problem that I have. And my brother used to tell me, he's like, but you're not Superman, Pat. You can't solve everybody's problems.
Yeah.
And so people, here's the thing that I do all the time. I do this all the time. Someone comes to me, and I'm trying to get better at this with my wife and my son, but someone comes to me and they tell me something that's wrong, or they tell me something that they're worrying about or whatever. And I'm like, well, you should do this.
Sure.
Well, you should do this.
We've got the answer.
You should do this. And a lot of times what people need is they just want someone to tell, and you should just shut up,
just
and
listen.
Sit there and listen.
Yeah.
And I remember a lot of times with my brother, him telling me about the things that were going on. Yeah. And I would sit there and just bark orders at him of like what he should do and get your life together. And, you know, I mean, I've had, you know, so like we said earlier, you know, I've been doing radio for a long time.
Yeah.
And there was a time period where, you know, I didn't have anything. But there's been a lot of time where I've had probably more than I deserve.
Sure.
And so sometimes people come to me with like kind of real world, you know, problems. And I'm just like, well, just do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here's the key. What do you mean? Buy another one, or, you know, just do whatever.
That's a dumb question.
Well, so to give a little insight about my brother's situation,
yeah,
my brother had horrible varicose veins on his legs. Yeah. So my family, we're all great big fat people. Yeah. All right. At least our bodies want to be great big fat people. Yeah. And my brother had a horrible, horrible varicose vein situation on his leg. And he had to lose over 100 pounds to join the Navy, yeah, which he did.
I know. Incredibly.
He's an amazing person. Yeah. There were months where he was eating just this cabbage soup. And running. So the varicose vein situation in my brother's leg progressed so badly that he couldn't run.
Yeah.
And I remember he told me that he was like, they're telling me I got to get my leg amputated.
I remember that.
And you got to bear in mind, most nights I was drinking.
Yeah.
And so I'm not giving sound advice or being very sensitive to anyone.
Yeah.
And, I don't even remember the advice. I think I told him, I remember telling him, dude, because so my brother was a Navy corpsman, which is a medic.
Yeah.
And my brother was very concerned that my brother shot himself the day before he was supposed to get deployed to Iraq.
Yeah.
And my brother was very concerned that he wouldn't be able to do his job. And he felt, and I still feel, that the Navy did not do a good job of taking care of my brother's communication situation with his superior officers. And so my brother did what he did, you know, partially because he felt that he couldn't do his job.
Right.
And that's probably way more information than anybody wants, but yeah, just kind of putting things to perspective.
Well, I'm sure there's people out there that have the same feeling, even if it's not in the military.
Well, I just, you know,
there are people that they go to, Pat, and they do unload. And they get that back.
Dude,
and
so
there's other
so
people
mad
that feel like that.
I was so mad. The Navy. So when someone's in the military and they die, people from the military come to your house.
Sure.
And
notify you.
And well, I knew. I already knew.
Yeah.
But this guy showed up at my house and I had known that my brother was trying to correspond with this guy via email.
Oh, the same person.
The same dude showed up at my house and I lost it. I almost got my ass kicked by a couple guys in full dress Navy uniform in my own front yard.
Yeah.
And you know what? And those guys, some of the things I said to them was way out of line. Yeah, the guy was like, we want to be at the funeral. We want to come and give him his military honor. I was like, I'll email you.
Yeah.
That didn't help. It didn't help. But here's the thing. I'm not special because my mom died while I was young, and I'm not special because my brother passed away. You know, I mean, everybody's got problems.
Bingo.
Everybody's got problems.
That's right.
And what I didn't do a good job of realizing that I was in crisis.
Yeah.
And I drank at my problems for a very, very long time.
Yeah.
And getting sober was the best thing that has happened to me in my life, aside from meeting my wife and my son being born.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's beautiful, man. I mean, the whole thing of just how...
And if anybody, here's the thing. So I knew for years that I had a horrible relationship with alcohol and partying. I mean, just, I could tell all the stories. One of the things that we learn in recovery is that my story, the reason I'm not going to go into all these different fun is because there is only one story.
Yeah.
And it happens to everybody that has a problem with substance abuse. And then, you know, I don't even know exactly what it is I'm trying to say right now. It's just that if you're dealing with this, you know, I would encourage you to get help sooner rather than later. And that's hard because you're always going to do it tomorrow.
Yeah.
Like I'm going to sober up tomorrow. I'm going to get it together. You know, going to rehab's a lot like having a baby.
Sure.
It's never convenient.
Yeah.
But you need to do it. So
when you figured that out, you made the decision. And I remember going through this whole thing.
Oh, I guess you could say I made the decision.
Well, you kind of ended up doing it.
I could have told the whole world.
You could have. That is true. But I remember.
And then just go taking like what? What would I? You know what? I've often fantasized like, because here's one of the horrible things I used to do. I used to drink and watch the show Intervention.
Yeah.
And I would be like, don't do it. Don't do it. You know, I guess I could have gone and gotten like $9,000 out of my checking account and bought a bunch of drugs and bought a bunch of liquor and just hold up.
Sure, right.
But
you made the choice. And at the end of the day, I was there. I was in your kitchen with your wife. When you made the choice, the day you went in to do the whole detox, when you came out of detox, I was there. So I know it was a choice. And you had to make it. And I remember you were definitely hesitant at the beginning. Like, what? And you could pull every excuse. Well, but I got to go to work. How am I going to figure that out? And I'm sure there's a lot of people.
I got to go to work. You know, I got to get to work where they all hate me.
But I mean, you did. You were going all through all these things. And at the end of the day, you pulled the trigger and said, I'm going. And you went.
Well,
you know, that was the first step. And I think that that was the time when I looked at you and said, holy cow, that's the one you look for. Right? And I look at my dad, who was a big drinker, and he did a very similar thing while I was on my mission. He just said, cold turkey, I got to stop. And he did the same thing you did.
That's
and
awesome.
I've always admired that about you and my father is there's people that just try this so long. And you just said, okay, I'm going to do it and I'm going to stick to it. And then I'd be at your house or we'd work out and you were always, and you just stuck and we'd count the days and you know, the t-shirts and the medallions and everything and the races and all this. And it was just, it's been so awesome to watch this journey. But I guess what would your recommendation, if there are people that are in that type of situation, whether it be a Philip that's, you know, looking for advice and then just lost, you know, and you feel that you might have some good advice for them on how you could see them reaching out or what you feel that you didn't do, which I think you did a great job. I think that's that you can't fix that kind of stuff. You were a great brother, and I know how much Philip loves you. Because, I mean, I remember standing on your balcony at the old apartment, stone, whatever it was, and I remember talking about his whole leg thing and girls and all kinds of stuff and going over to Okinawa and all these, just these long stories and so on. Because if you knew me and Philip, I love to play the Bash Brothers. We go to parties with Pat, and we just want to go protect all the time anybody that was doing anything. But I guess what type of advice for people that are in this situation right now that you were in, pivotal, 4 years ago, over 4 years ago, that are saying, I just don't know how. I don't know how to get out of what I'm doing now.
So here's the thing. Here's what I've learned. You do know.
Really?
And it's that small voice that... So I got kind of a little bit of a policy now.
Sure.
And a lot of it is in regards to like working out, but I try and apply it to other things.
Yeah.
If I think about it, do it.
Sure. That's a good driver.
If you think about it, that means you want to do it.
Yeah.
It came up for a reason.
Yeah.
Do it.
Yeah.
So...
It's like a Jocko mentality.
Well, you know, dude, I listen to the Jocko podcast a lot.
Yeah.
And
what is that mentality?
I don't know if I believe that Jocko adheres to all of his all of the
I want to say calendar when you show me the watch. I don't know if that's the same watch.
I don't know if he adheres to all the ego help that he offers people.
Sure.
You know, because he discovered Dr. Jordan Peterson. You know, but I am a fan. I listen all the time. Yeah. I think there's a lot of good information in there.
Sure.
And, you know, I've looked to a lot, you know, so this is what they say about substance abuse.
Okay.
So when you're drinking, you kind of don't age. So I've been partying. My partying was like, you know, the day I remember when I was 21 years old and I went to the Olive Garden with my parents and I was like, I'm having some beer because I can have beer and you can't stop me. And, you know,
marking your territory.
My mom brought me a 6-pack of Rolling Rock on my 21st birthday.
Yeah.
But you don't progress past that.
Really?
So I was 38 years old and I kind of had to, and life tapped me on the shoulder and said, hey man, you haven't been an adult yet.
Sure.
And I really hadn't.
Yeah.
And so, you know, like here's a good example. I could do nothing with computers while I was still drinking. Sure. I didn't even bother to buy a computer until I met my wife and I was 27 years old. And that That's wasn't a computer that I bought. It was the one she had that she moved in with, you know, like I just,
she introduced into my
dude,
world.
I was the king of fighting change.
Sure.
The king of fighting. So here's something that happened at the radio station. So people used to win stuff.
Yeah.
And you'd win stuff.
Yeah.
And then you'd call in.
Yeah.
And we'd have to fill out a winner sheet.
Yeah, I remember.
And we'd write your name down and everything. And then at the end of the show, you walk the winner sheets up to the front desk.
Yeah.
And I was furious when they decided to start doing this on computers.
Just email the name up to Julie.
No.
Absolutely not.
Totally. That's how anti-change.
Why would I email her when I could take her the paper?
Well, bro, I was one of those people. I was like, the paper's fine. Why are we messing with the paper?
Oh, man. The font is better than my handwriting.
Yeah.
that's crazy. I've been doing this for 20 years.
No, seriously.
That's
funny. You know, I mean, if you... Here's a good way to check, like pump the brakes.
Yeah.
If you think you got a drinking problem, just decide. Don't set a date. Don't look off into the future. Just decide. If you think you have a drink, or if you want to know, I guess is a better thing to say.
Would you say only drinking or all substance?
Dude, anything can
be. Is it any kind of addiction?
You know, I'll speak mostly about drinking, but like.
But I mean, do you think it would apply to anything?
Well, this one example is specifically to drink.
Okay.
Decide to take a month off. If you know what? So yeah. A healthy person.
Yeah.
Or, you know, in a pamphlet, in one of the pamphlets I've seen, the first step is take the weekend off.
Okay.
So if you go to therapy and you go to your therapist and you're like, I think I have a drinking problem. Chances are your therapist is going to say, don't drink this weekend.
Sure.
And if not drinking that weekend is a problem for you.
Yeah.
That means maybe you got a problem.
Sure.
So I know a lot of people that do this. If you think you got a drinking problem, let you know, scratch the month. Take the week. Let's stick with the professionals.
Sure.
If you think you got a drinking problem, try not to drink for a weekend or X amount of time. But start right now.
Sure.
Don't do it down to, because just the ability to do that, to cut it off without planning, I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And I mean, and if you're dealing with that, dude.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. Like, I mean, if you have a drinking problem, you get a handle on it, because it only gets worse the longer you're dealing with it.
Sure.
It's not going to be better to deal with it later. I put mine off for years.
Yeah.
And I shouldn't. But I mean, that's a good way. I've given that advice to several people
that
have reached out to me. Be like,
have them.
I think I have a, well, try and stop for a minute.
Yeah.
I didn't, you know, dude, I used to be like, okay, I'm not going to drink on Monday. Dude, like if you don't drink during the week, then you're okay to blow it out on the weekend.
Sure.
And that never lasts. It didn't last for me.
Because it doesn't put you in a rhythm and it doesn't create a habit.
Dude, I'm a really big believer in momentum.
Oh, yeah.
If you do good stuff today, chances are you're going to do good stuff tomorrow.
Yeah, I like that. I like that ideology. Do you think any of it has to do with proximity of friends or people that you influence that you're around all the time?
Well,
because I've always wondered that. And I always think of, is it change when you put yourself in a culture around where the temptation's not there? Like even in proximity of a bar, like if you're always, you know, going out with a team where you have access to alcohol. Is that any different than going to places that don't have access, or does it really even matter?
I got beer in my house.
Sure.
You know, my wife drinks beer.
Sure. So that would make a difference.
I think it makes a difference, because we got a saying with the group of dudes that I hang out with that if you know, you hang out in a barber shop, eventually you're going to get a haircut.
Sure.
Dude, if you're having a problem, don't go to those places.
That's what I was wondering. Yeah. If you distance yourself, or do you just think, oh, well, just learn to deal with it as you're there.
Well, dude, here's the thing. Now, why would I go to a bar?
Yeah, right.
You know, I mean, I'm really fortunate that I get to do a little bit of work in Nashville and Memphis.
I was going to ask about your work.
And you know, Nashville is a hell of a drinking town.
Yeah.
I went down for a radio station I work for out there, and we covered the 2019 NFL draft that was in Nashville.
Yeah.
And we were doing that broadcast from a studio in Jason Aldean's bar.
Okay.
And
did you have any feelings while you were in that moment?
Yeah, man. I was the other day, just the other day, I was at the gym working out, and I was like, oh, I want a beer so bad.
Yeah, sure.
And I called my guy and I told him, and I was like, help me.
Yeah.
But dude, just when you make changes, I guess what we're driving at with this is when you make changes, you got to make them all the way.
Yeah.
So
be all in. And like you said, when you hear it or feel it, just do it.
Well, dude,
I like that.
That's part of the bargaining is what we're kind of discussing there, is people like, well, if I'm good for, I don't have a reason to go to bars anymore.
Sure.
So being, and when I'm at a bar, like when I'm someplace working, I'm working. So it doesn't matter to me.
Yeah.
You know,
what are the benefits you felt since you stopped?
Well, I can sleep.
This is an interesting point too. You would talk about that. And initially, right when you became sober, you would say that it was discovered, I guess, that you hadn't really even been sleeping. You'd just been passing out and you were actually not getting a quality of sleep. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So it's changing the quality, right? Which is just a different thing than actually getting sleep.
When someone is drinking as much as I was drinking.
Yeah.
So I was physically dependent on alcohol.
Yeah.
And, you know, towards the end, yeah, I had to drink until I'd pass out, and then I'd wake up. And
but it would be different, because that's not the same as like falling asleep, especially with the REM cycles and all that stuff.
No, it's totally different. No, it's, you know, in recovery, we say it's nice to wake up instead of come to.
Sure.
So, You know, that's one of the very first gifts of sobriety. Sweet. There comes a day a few months in when you kind of stop worrying about it.
Yeah.
And you kind of like the tension goes out of your chest and everything from, you know, worrying about trying to stay so eventually you find a little bit of a rhythm.
Yeah.
And early on, I tell people this all the time. Early on, that first night where you like, and you really don't even know. I didn't realize it till the morning, the next morning.
Okay.
Is when I was like, oh my gosh, I just had a regular day.
Yeah.
Nothing terrible happened. Yeah. No, I didn't scream at anyone. No one screamed at me. You know, I mean, nothing happened. I just had a regular day. Then I went to bed and I laid down, fell right asleep, woke up and felt refreshed. What?
Yep.
What is this?
That's crazy. What other, any other benefits that you'd felt that really, cause I think if I, and the reason I'm asking this, cause I'm thinking if somebody's in this rut and they're thinking, what, why would I stop? What?
Okay.
I'm trying to think of what are some other things I can look forward to? Like even losing weight, I'm thinking, gosh, I need to lose a lot of weight I gained over COVID. And I'm thinking, but if I look at the benefits, I'm like, man, I'd rather feel like that.
You're going to feel amazing. If your drinking is bad enough where you're struggling with a problem with addiction. And again, I'm not telling anybody what, like,
of course
here's,
not.
Here's the thing. You don't have to.
Yeah.
You don't have to. People that are doing, people know.
Yeah.
You know, if your drinking is a problem, you know.
Yeah.
Here's a great benefit. And here's one that should be enough to sell anybody.
Okay.
You have no idea the strain that you're putting on the people that love you. I was breaking my wife's heart almost every night, and my son had a front row seat to all of it. So if you're trying to decide, you know, because that's something people always say, well, I'm not hurting anybody but me. That's not true. Because there are some people, but most people have people that love them.
Yeah.
And if you're doing this to yourself, you are hurting those people badly. And that's a reason.
Yeah.
So if you're asking for a reason.
Yeah, it's a big reason.
That's a reason.
Yeah.
You know?
So now kind of, you know, turn the corner. You have this great last 4 years. You hit a rhythm with 106.7.
Uh-huh.
You entered a new
Rock
106.7.
Here, let me do it all.
Please.
So it's Rock 106.7 in Salt Lake City. It's Rock 103 in Memphis. 105.9 The Rock in Nashville. Nashville's classic rock. And a radio station that I really love is 94.7 The Brew in Oklahoma.
Oh, snap!
That's where we're at.
Not where it started. It started with Rock 106.7.
Yeah, Rock 106.7.
And this journey has all come to in the last 4 years. How exciting is that?
It's really fun. It's really fun because, you know, man, it's...
Because you're a Utah legend, bro. You can be humble all you want.
That's not true.
You walk around and say... So this is the benefit of going anywhere with Patrick is, oh my gosh, are you DB? You'll be at the gym. Stop it. Now you're calling me a liar and I'm offended. We'd be at the gym and Pat's talking to me. And you automatically see people turn their head and start to stare. And then they'll just kind of pretend they're working out.
No.
And then we'll go to walk by and they'll go, hey, are you DB? Because they can tell. Because his voice is just so, everybody knows his voice. Everybody knows his voice. But, and I'm not saying that like it's some kind of flatter. You're one of my best friends. You're my brother. So I don't need to flatter you. But I look at that and I just think, Utah, you've worked so hard over 20 years to inspire, to motivate, to, you know, to make people laugh, to make them smile, to entertain.
That's what my main goal is.
Yeah.
Make you laugh.
You do it. You want to entertain and help. And then now that's been recognized and you're able to go to different markets and do. How impactful is that? And how rewarding is that to you?
It's fun. It's fun to be on the radio in other cities. It's very fun to be on the radio in other cities. I love the people of Memphis, Tennessee, and the people that I work with out there.
And everything about Memphis. Mm-hmm. You're always talking, we'll be working, and he's like, oh, did you see the Memphis Tigers are playing today? And I'm thinking, what in the world?
Well, it's fun. It's fun to talk. It's fun to talk about You know, I don't.
It's not just a job. No, like I said, we'll be lifting, and you'll be talking about the Memphis Tigers basketball game.
I love what I do for a living, yeah. And I love following the Running Utes, and I love following the Cougars, I love that rivalry that the Cougars better win one, or it's not going to be a rivalry anymore. It's a dysfunctional relationship. It's abusive
for a long time.
But I love iHeartMedia, and I'm so grateful to them.
Yeah,
and. You know, I just decided to get serious about my life, and I didn't I didn't realize that for a long time I was just a passenger in my life.
Sure.
And I wasn't actively like concerned, you know, with what direction it was really going in.
Yeah.
So I just I love it. And you know, dude, I do a little podcast with a friend of ours named Big Boot with a gentleman named Mr. Big
Little Boot. This is small change compared to that bad boy.
Well, and we started that podcast because Carl told us to. Carl told us to at the Vasa.
We were at Vasa, and I remember we were together, and I said, "Go talk to Buddha."
Dude, I'm very grateful for what I do, and I'm very happy in my life right now. And dude, I grew up here. I'm from here. Of course, I'm gonna know everybody. Of course, I'm gonna know people wherever I go.
Sure.
So, two people on the radio show that I work on.
Yeah.
The last time they went to Memphis.
Yeah.
I didn't go with them.
Yeah.
But the last time they went, they got in an Uber from the airport.
Yeah.
And the guy was like, "Hey, you're Brooke and Hooker from the..." That's cool.
That's people, cool.
Okay, that's... And to me, that's different than Salt Lake City, where I'm from.
I understand
that. But, yeah, dude, there's a
that's
little...
That's so exciting.
There's a little bit of fame that comes with... There's a little bit of sizzle that comes with radio. It's a little bit sexy.
Yeah.
You know, I love doing radio.
Give a shout out to the podcast real quick. And for those that haven't caught the podcast yet, tell them a little bit about...
I'm not even sure. Like, I'm sure... Here's how crazy I am.
Yeah.
I'm sure when I leave here, I'm going to be like, "I shouldn't have told the pee your pants story." Or, you know, I'm just going to agonize over this podcast and the one I just recorded with Buddha today.
Sure.
When I was no longer at 97.1 ZHT,
right,
there was a period of time where I wasn't on the air.
Yeah.
Anywhere.
Yeah.
And I didn't like that.
Yeah.
And that kind of pissed me off that someone took away my microphone. And so me and Carl know Big Buddha from Fox 13, Utah's greatest television station.
That's right.
Fox 13 and Utah's most famous celebrity.
Big Buddha, Leroy Tail.
Biggest Buddha. So I had kind of expressed these ideas to Carl that I was like, "Man, I haven't been on the air and I'm missing it." And then Buddha and I would sit and kind of, you know, chit chat. We'd have little chatty Cathy relief.
We'd catch up at the gym and it would be between, you know, between reps and sit and chat it up.
Relief society. And Carl would say, "You guys should do a podcast."
Oh yeah.
And so Carl, dude, this is for real. And dude, my podcast is we rarely even check how much of an audience is.
It's, I know you know
that's not what it's about. But I run into people that listen to it, and so we put it together because Carl thought it would be a good idea.
You're so sweet.
And if you're smart, you'll listen to Carl too. So Buddha and I started doing this podcast, and what it is, our podcast is a completely unique snowflake idea of a podcast.
Nah.
No one else, no one anywhere else has ever thought to do a podcast where people really talk.
That's right.
We're going to say what we mean.
But you're allowed to. You have a lot more liberty on your podcast than you do in other forums.
Well, you know, laundry list of people that I've attacked publicly. Ed Smart.
Multiple times.
You know, Shauna Lake, Casey Scott, Robert Kirby, just to name local people. It's as close to candid, real life conversation as I think really maybe you can do on a podcast, because that's what everybody says. They're like, "Dude, we're going to do a podcast and we're going to spit it for real."
And then they're getting an agenda and everything. Yeah. It's kind of
Eventually you got to start selling something.
That's right. That's right. You got to appease somebody else.
So I had this conversation on another podcast with a local dude.
Yeah.
Even on podcasts, people don't say what they really mean.
Sure.
Because you know what? What you really think is awful.
Yeah, that's right.
I think Big Buddha and I do a pretty good job of coming pretty close to a conversation that there isn't a microphone at.
Yeah.
But even in our conversations, there are things that I cut out.
Sure.
There are things that we walk back.
That makes sense.
And you're like,
the intent isn't to offend.
No,
right?
No.
It's to be raw.
Dude, well, you know what's pretty funny is That's an interesting concept that you even bring that up, because the intent isn't to offend. So it's the DB with Big Buddha Podcast,
yep.
and it's everywhere you can find podcasts.
That's right.
So of all the times that I've said horrible things on my podcast, yeah. I've wondered why. So I have had pushback, and you've said you've seen people say some negative things.
That's true. I have.
Okay, because I really haven't.
Yeah, I have.
And
maybe, on the interwebs.
Yeah. And then it occurred to me one day, why would anyone say, people that go to my podcast to listen to it?
Choose to listen to it.
Yeah, they're already fans, or maybe fans isn't the correct word, but they're already people that are, so if you come to my podcast, if you're familiar with my body of work at all, and then
you should know what to expect.
Well, but I mean, I have had things where very, very few though. And, yeah. And you know what? Hey, and I'm honest. Maybe that just means nobody's listening. That's, I'm cool with that.
Sometimes you just take a shot at somebody to see if they're even listening.
No, Robert Kirby, scumbag. No, I think we do a good job, and I just...
Yeah, I do too, and that's the thing. But it's also, something, Rob, what I love about it as well, and I encourage you to go and check out his podcast, is that it's real time. They talk about current events weekly. Uh-huh. They're really dedicated to making sure that they're talking about what's fresh. And I'll tell you what, that's one thing I love about Pat and in Buddha, man, this guy does his homework. He comes prepped to do this podcast the right way. And they're talking about everything that's real time.
Awesome. But dude, thank you for having me on.
Brother, I love you. And thanks for being on, man. Any other words of wisdom you have for the people out there? There's going to be a lot of DB followers here.
You know, dude, I hope that, you know, dude, so this pod, I feel like, did I do okay?
Brother,
like, I mean,
you're
I think
the
we
man.
Would, cause we
Patrick, I would.
Well, wait a second. Isn't it just like, don't we want to talk a little bit about adversity?
Absolutely.
And kind of meeting.
That's
so purpose. That was kind of the lens I was looking through when I came in here today.
Yeah.
I want to be very clear.
Yeah.
I have a great life.
Yeah.
And I, as far back as I can remember, I'm a pretty lucky son of a gun.
Yeah.
And things go pretty well for me most of the time.
Yeah.
So I don't want anyone listening to some of the challenges, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't want anyone to think that, that I'm someone who's crying in my Diet Coke that I've had a rough life, because I haven't.
Yeah.
My dad's a great man. My brother, my mom, everybody has problems.
Yep.
Everybody has problems.
Yep.
And my problems aren't worse than yours.
That's correct.
And I just wanted to come on and share a little bit, if I was going to tell people something that maybe I want people to know.
Yeah.
First of all, I would say to the people of Salt Lake City.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for looking after me. Thank you for spending your mornings with me on the radio. Thank you, because you have literally put food in my mouth and a house over my family. And sincerely, thank you to the people of Utah. That is what I would like to say.
I love that, brother.
Thank you, because you have given me a great life. And I love being here. I love being from Salt Lake City. I think Utah is such a unique and wonderful place. And I'm so proud to be a media personality in such a great city. And the people that have been so kind to listen to the radio stations that I work at. So thank you, Salt Lake City. Thank you, Utah. That's what I want
to
say.
I love that, brother. And like I said, I appreciate you put that caveat on. And the reason I love to have you on here is because I know there's so many people that listen to you, that love your influence, that wake up to you every single day. And I've had conversations with many people over the course of my life that do that, that sometimes they're just going through a little struggle and you bring a little bit of light to their day. And I think some of them are going to walk away just going, he's just a normal guy
dude,
like me.
You know what?
Because I know they see you that way, but at the same time, we don't always look at other people like that. There's something internally sometimes we walk away thinking, I'm the only one that goes through challenge and it's tough.
Well, and that's because everybody's challenges are tailor-made just
that's
for
right.
you.
That's right.
And it feels
They're
so
unique.
Big. It
that's
feels
right.
so like, dude, you're the star of your own movie.
That's right.
So everything feels like, I think that how much does it say about human beings that at one point we thought we were the center of the universe?
Serious, right? That's right. That's a great point.
And everyone is the center of their own universe.
That's right.
And so it's... It's not weird to feel that way. You're just wrong.
Yeah.
Yep. So
if you haven't tuned in yet, make sure you follow his podcast. And I also say, go to Rock 106.7 if you're not familiar, and let this guy wake you up every morning such an entertainer, such a fun way to kind of wake up and get your day going. But also, if you ever see him on the street, make sure you go and give him a high five and give him, show him some love. Because I'll tell you what, there, like I said, there's a small list of things that I wouldn't do for this man. But I'll tell you what, they're really because they'd probably just put me in prison and then I couldn't see him anymore.
Well, and they'd be a sin.
That's right.
And Carl's a good God-fearing man.
But there are some things that I would cross the line for, but we won't talk about that today. That's another deal.
Are you a bishop yet?
I'm not a bishop.
When are they going to make you a bishop?
Never.
How many times have they asked
you? They've never asked me.
I think you need to be a stake president.
The only stake president I'll be is the president of the steak I go buy at Smith's and cook up on the grill tonight.
Hey, thank you. Yeah. Thanks for talking to me.
Yeah.
And, don't anybody make fun of me for peeing my pants.
Never. Don't ever say a word. And all of you that did, we're going to come find you.
No, they're fine.
Anyway,
if you saw it, I'm sure it was uncomfortable for them, too.
So he apologizes in advance. Anyway, hey, love you guys so much. Love you, Patrick Sherman Essex. You're my brother. Thanks for being on the podcast. We look forward to rolling out the rest of season 2. What a great episode to kick it off with my brother, Patrick Sherman Essex. Make sure you check him out. And we'll look forward to rolling out more stories as we go forward in season 2. Thanks for joining us, and much aloha.